I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. Earlier this year, George Lucas made a motion picture movie called Red Tails. It was about the Tuskegee Airmen, the African-American pilots who flew in World War II. That movie helped to reopen a chapter in American history and Black American history by showcasing how racial segregation was handled by the U.S. military. Tomorrow, Mayor Menino is honoring those pilots. He's dedicating a bridge to the Tuskegee Airmen. Joining us to talk about the legacy of these men and the local ties so many of them have to New England is Charles E. Walker, Jr. His father, Charles E. Walker, was a member of the elite Tuskegee 477th Bombardment Squadron. Charles Walker, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Kelly. It's good to see you.
I knew the story of the Tuskegee Airmen, and of course I knew that I guess they were came from all parts of the country, but I didn't realize there was a significant number of them here in New England.
I'm not familiar with the exact number of that were in New England, but I do know about a little bit about the history. I know that they were commissioned in 1941, starting in 1939, and they went from in 1 year they went from 500 to over 3,000 recruits, there were 996 pilots that served and 450 that went to combat, but. The exact number of New Englanders, and you have a strong chapter here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm familiar with some of the members.
So the 996 that trained from 1941 to 1946 trained at a place called then Tuskegee Institute, now Tuskegee University in Alabama.
That's correct.
So that's how they got the name Tuskegee Airmen.
Right.
And we should set the stage, Chuck. Back in that time, black men, black women too, but black men were really it was difficult to serve in any part of the American military. There was an intense racial segregation. Black men had tried and tried, were rejected in World War I. There was a great amount of pressure on Congress and presidents to make certain that this changed so that people could serve. So these pilots really went out on faith to be trained, that they would be trained and ready to go as fighter pilots if that segregation was struck down in the military.
That's absolutely correct. This particular general, bear in mind, we're talking about a small fraction of military servicemen, and Tuskegee Airmen certainly deserve all the credit in the world, but we're talking about the black, the courage and the bravery and fighting adversity for centuries, from starting from the Revolutionary War all the way to the present. But this particular generation, you're absolutely right. It was a result of a lot of pressure put on by the NAACP. A. Philip Randolph. This preceded Martin Luther King, by the way. And and you're talking to my father was born in 1919. And a lot of them were born in 1919 and before 1924. And you know, of that generation of people, they grew up at probably the worst time in American history. Racial violence and adversity was at its zenith. They were born to parents who'd gone through the First World War, and they were emptied into an era that preceded the Second World War. 1896, Plessy versus Ferguson, the United States Supreme Court that memorialized segregation legally, was not overturned until 1954. 50 some odd years later, and so for six decades, you had the most hostile racial segregation. And yes, there were lawsuits that were filed, and a compromise was reached politically, and they were able to get. And I'm cutting through a lot, yes. To the chase, but mm-hmm. The compromise was okay. We will let these enlisted airmen fly. And they'll have their own segregated airbase.
But we have to make that clear that it was is an all black unit.
It's all black unit, right. And they had to have educations, unlike the white cohorts who could drop out of high school and enlist. They had to go through a rigorous education experience before they even got to Tuskegee, Can you imagine that? That's how racism gets a slap in his face, because now you're going to require educated, college-educated black men, 3,000, to fly these airplanes. What a record they set.
So the record, let me give the punchline for people. There are a lot of people who know about the Greatest Generation, about World War II heroes, yep. but few or not many still know about the legacy of the Tuskegee Airmen. So the punchline is that they were not allowed to go to the front. They could not go to the front in battle. So they found a place for themselves by becoming escorts of the Allied bombers. Now, what did that mean? Chuck, you can describe that.
Sure. Well, you got to understand, to answer your question directly, and if you allow me, I'll go right back a little bit to emphasize a point. But escorts were, you know, as you see, and if you did see Red Tails, you know, and as we grew up on World War II movies, you saw the John Wayne movies where they fly alongside the bombers, and you know, they were their wingmen, and they would they would be intercepted in midair by the Germans. And and one thing I appreciated about, and I'm sorry if I'm going too far astray, in the Red Tails movie, and I'm glad.
Well, we're going to get back to that. So just tell me about what
escort pilots were. They were designed to protect the bombers from being shot down. That's basically it. And they were allowed to. That's what they did as escorts.
And the reason that the Tuskegee Airmen's legacy should have come forth much more than it has been until recent years is because they never lost a pilot. That was their reputation.
That was their reputation until 2007. And there have been follow-up studies. And, there were about 27 bombers that were lost. But that doesn't detract from the fact that they still had... they flew 179 escort missions, sorties they call them, and out of 179 bomber escorts, 172 they did not lose one plane, and they only lost 7 in average 27 out of those 7 bottles that they did protect them in.
Here's the bottom line. They were so successful in their mission that the white pilots started requesting
them.
They
did request them. That is a fact.
And that is how one way where we started undermining some of the segregation in the military. Now, you reference Red Tails. Red Tails was a movie done by George Lucas, yep. George Lucas of Star Wars fame.
Yep.
He took it upon himself, funded the movie himself. He was impressed by their story, wanted people to know. This movie came out earlier today. I want to give us everybody a chance to hear just a preview from the film Red Tails.
What we do, how well we do it, does it matter?
And you all thought what?
You'd sign up and that'd be the end of 100 years of bigotry. Get your head up, son. You're fighter pilots.
We have a right to fight for our country, the same as every other American. We will not go away.
I can't afford the kind of losses my bombers have been suffering.
So there you have it. They reached out to them when they realized they were quite skilled at what they did, and they wanted them to do that. So here we are back, and you know, so that's the overall legacy. I got some more to say about their overall legacy, but I want to get to your dad.
Well, before you do that, can I just say something about the Red Tails movie? Just a second. That was not a documentary.
Right, we know.
It was the audience has to know that.
Yes.
And they received a lot of criticism saying, you know, the facts weren't correct and not accurate. It was a war movie.
Right.
And but the only difference is it was starred a lot of black pilots, and there was deference given to some of the actual things that occurred. But this was Hollywood, but Lucas deserves a lot of kudos in any event.
For one reason, he opened up the story of the Tuskegee Airmen to many more people, but in this venue, in making a feature film,
right.
Which, as you point out, is not a documentary, meaning that he could take a little license as he told the story. But the overall story was as it was. I want to hear about your dad, who...
Okay.
Was a Tuskegee Airman, and at one point wanted you to go to military service, but you weren't interested. What was it? Did you hear him talk about his days as an airman, and how full of pride was he about being a part of that?
Well, the first question is I hardly heard him talk a word about his experience, and I think he was very much symbolic, or it was characteristic of that generation. They didn't talk about it at all. I asked him some pretty some rigid questions, he wanted. I'm named after him. He was a He grew up in Jackson, Mississippi, Jackson, Michigan. Sorry, and he was a seventh born, and he had and his parents. His mother wanted him to become a minister of music, and so he went to Eastern Michigan College and studied music and got his degree in music. And then, against their will, he enlisted in the Air Force. And he had to go to a segregated test in Detroit, and he passed and was able to get into the Tuskegee Airmen. He served for 24 years in the Air Force, retired as a lieutenant colonel, and was the first Black Air Force base commander in Southern California, Oxnard, California. He also, and I'm just to round the circle, because it, so much of the military helped him in around his life, got his master's in aeronautic engineering, and headed up the airport, was the supervisor, the first Black to supervise an airport in the United States. And that airport was a small airport. It's where Bobby Kennedy flew into during his visit to California. Unfortunately, a few days after he landed, he met his demise. But it was a significant history that he had. But no, he didn't really talk too much about his background. And a lot I found out about him was through his friends and almost after his death.
I think that, as you point out, that's part and parcel of those members of the Greatest Generation. I am speaking with Chuck E. Walker, Jr. His dad was Chuck E. Walker, and he was one of the members of the 477th Bombardment Division, the Tuskegee Airmen, the all-Black troop of fighter pilots that escorted Allied bombers during World War II, whose legacy for many is just becoming known. And tomorrow, here in Boston, Mayor Menino and others will honor them with a bridge being dedicated outside of the VFW Post 1018 and their legacy. Right. So I want to play a clip from a local Tuskegee Airman. This is Connie Napier, and he was interviewed after seeing the film Red Tails. And I think what he says may give a little sense about why some of the Tuskegee Airmen didn't speak about it.
It's difficult at times to tell the whole true story because it embarrasses me, because I'm a Tuskegee Airman. I'm a Black man, as anybody can see. To tell the true story of what we went through, and this is our country, and that's what we were out to prove, as well as anyone else's. It's embarrassing.
I like his incredible candor, and it typified, I don't know if that was exactly the reason why my father was silent, but they were embarrassed. They were ashamed. One of the arguments I had with my father when he worked to get me into the Air Force Academy was that he wanted me to serve, and he also made me cut my afro off, and that was taking oxygen out of the room for me. And one argument I had with him was, I said, "Dad, you know, you take this thing service too far. You serve in a segregated military. I hit him hard. I'm telling you. My uncle was in the room. I said, "You took this military service too far. Your comrades go over there. You take off from segregated air bases. You fly in segregated airplanes. You escort white pilots, and then you get downed and you get buried in segregated graves when you come back to the United States. You take this thing service too far, Daddy." And I thought I was going to get executed at that point. And my uncle said, "Charles, don't listen to Chucky. That's why some mothers eat their young." And we laughed a little bit. And my dad said, "I did it because I wanted to learn how to fly." And that's all I wanted to do. And that particular pride. They also went in there. All you have to know, and the audience should know, and to this great person that just spoke, they went in there with this thing, this idea of a double V. They figure if they win in World War II, that they'll win for all African Americans. The right to vote, to be treated equally, to have access to homes and to jobs like anyone else. They fought for the American dream. And so for some odd reason, they feel a little bit disgraced, and But they really were the legacy that we all stand for.
As I said, they're finally coming into their own in terms of recognition, and they, following up what you just said about fighting what they fought for, Colin Powell, our Secretary of State and Joint Chiefs of Staff, was able to honor them at the White House when they got the Congressional Medal of Honor in 2007. This is when President Bush awarded them the Congressional Medal of Honor. And here's what he had to say to them.
Notwithstanding what they had put in the Constitution about us being property, we still believed in the vision that the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution set forth for the kind of America that could be in this new land. We believed in that. We had to believe in it. What else would we have to believe in? And the other reason, I think, is that military service, laying down your life for your country, was about the only way in which, for so many years, blacks could demonstrate that they were equal to any white citizen.
That's just so powerful. And I had a chance to hear him speak once when he talked about the connection from those airmen to his own military career. And he said, and I quote, "Were it not for the Tuskegee Airmen, I could not have gotten where I am today." And it was just really chilling at how much credit he gave them.
Yeah, I actually was privileged to attend that ceremony in the Rotunda at Congress. And it was something else to see. They came in with walkers. They had these red blazers. Obama had them sitting behind him at the inauguration.
Yes, because we should say he was invited. They were invited to the inauguration,
absolutely.
President Obama's inauguration in 2008.
And, you know, they stood tall. Even the president gave a good speech about all the unreturned salutes. Can I go to that for a second? I think even though this is tremendous and we haven't even gotten to all their wonderful history, they knocked down 111 German planes. They flew 15,000 combat missions. They received over 744 medals and et cetera. The indignities that they had to endure cannot be understated. And I think this goes right to what the gentleman was saying. And they were airmen, and they would get on planes and trains, and they'd have to give up their seats to German prisoners of war. They had, even on their bases themselves, and my dad was subjected to this, they had to live in segregated barracks on their own bases. There was a case brought, Thurgood Marshall got involved in, where they had a segregated officers club. Because they protested, they preceded Rosa Parks, they protested. They were court-martialed for protesting. They had to suffer incredible indignities. Just after they became Tuskegee Airmen and throughout their tenure and still went to the war and fought. And fought so valiantly. One thing I really liked, and I was mentioning it in the Lucas one, although he didn't overemphasize it, they have to this day have flown the longest mission in aviation war history as escort pilots. They flew into Berlin 1,600 miles, and escorted all these bombers and didn't lose one bomber and came back. They went into Berlin to bomb Mercedes-Benz, Daimler factories that were making airplane engines, and they succeeded in that. And they got three distinguished unit awards, which has never been awarded in aviation history. So I'm chilling up now just thinking of their accomplishments. But I also want the audience to know that they weren't by any stretch the first blacks to fly airplanes. In fact, blacks were flying airplanes almost two decades before. You could read Phil Hart's book. There's a plug for you, Phil. Phil Hart's
the author
book
of a book about
black aviators. Mm-hmm. And if you just take the example of Eugene Bullard in 1917, this is before my dad was born. He was flying in France, and the first black, Kelly, the first black person to get a license was a woman, African American woman. That was Bessie Coleman.
But in the U.S. military,
it was
Tuskegee.
Tuskegee were the first military pilots.
And they're now, as you mentioned, they're in their 80s and 90s. Many of them have died since then. And I think it's especially poignant for them to continue to get the recognition that they deserve. And I'm impressed that even here in Boston, those members will be honored tomorrow. With Mayor Menino and at the American Legion Highway in Morton Street in Dorchester.
Good.
So that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think it is.
And it's open to the public. It's at 10:30 in the morning tomorrow.
Yep.
So, Chuck, thank you so much for coming to talk to us about this wonderful legacy of the Tuskegee Airmen and your father's part in it. We've been talking about the Tuskegee Airmen, the African-American pilots who served in World War II. And tomorrow, may I many know, we'll dedicate a bridge to the Tuskegee Airmen. It's at the American Legion Highway and Morton Street in Dorchester. Public is welcome. To learn more about the Tuskegee Airmen, visit WGBH News. And I've been speaking with Charles E. Walker, Jr. His father was Charles E. Walker, a member of the elite Tuskegee 477th Bombardment Squadron. Thank you so much, Chuck.
Thank you. Lieutenant Colonel, retired.
Lieutenant Colonel,
Charles
retired.
E. Walker. That's right. Thank
right.
you very much, and okay. It was an honor to be here.
Okay, thank you. What does a Shakespeare scholar, Marjorie Garber, have to say about Mad Libs, Mad Magazine, and Mad Men? She'll be joining us to explain. I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio on 89.7 WGBH.